Today, a raft of changes will hit us this year. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World. This post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, there are a significant number of legislative changes that came in the new year. And I had started to make a list for my post and then discovered that Charis Chang at news.com.au did it for me. And folks, there are several important changes that will hit. In fact, there are changes to government payments, new distinctive collars for dangerous dogs, and an Australian First program to get more women into the construction industry. And one very important one, which is hardly discussed at all, is the land tax changes in Victoria. And there's also a raft of superannuation changes made last year, which are now coming into effect. So here are some of the changes. There were boosts to payment recipients of youth, student and care allowances, and they will benefit from a boost to their payments from January 1 after the indexation rate was raised to 3.5%. That's the highest since 2012. Youth allowance payments for those living away from home will increase by $17.90 per fortnight to $537.40, while for those aged 18 or over living at home, it'll be boosted by $12.40, raising their fortnightly payments to $371.60. Older students on AusStudy will also receive a $17.90 fortnightly boost, bringing those payments to $537.40. Single parents with children will get an extra $23 per fortnight, bringing those payments to $688.20 every 2 weeks. Now, for our canine friends, new collars for Queensland dogs have come into effect. Regulated dogs in Queensland, including restricted breeds, declared dangerous dogs, and declared menacing dogs, must wear a distinctive red and yellow collar with reflective stripes from January 1. We want the same collar worn everywhere, so we all know what to look out for, Minister for Agricultural Industry Development and Fisheries and Minister for Rural Communities Mark Furness said. I had a thought. It would be really useful to have a similar collar on politicians. Danger. These politicians lie. Now let's talk about the increase to childcare subsidies. This won't kick in until March, in fact, but it will see childcare fees fall for wealthier families. Families with more than one child aged 5 and under will get a higher subsidy for their second child and younger children. The subsidy will increase by 30% on March the 7th, providing families earning less than $354,305 with a maximum subsidy of 95% of fees paid for their second and subsequent children. Under these changes, a family earning $110,000 a year will have the subsidy for their second child increase from 72 to 95% and will be $95 per week better off for 4 days of care. Now, let's talk about more women in tradie jobs. Victoria will be the first jurisdiction in Australia to adopt an equality policy in the construction industry. From January 1, 4% of labour hours for apprentices and trainees working on publicly funded construction projects valued at $20 billion or more will be required to be performed by women. The government's Building Equality Policy, the BEP, mandates female representation in at least 3% of each trade role, 7% of each non-trade position, and 35% of management supervisor and specialist labour roles. There'll actually be a transition period between 2022 and 2023, with penalties for non-compliance being introduced from 2024. Also, free trade agreements come into effect. The world's largest free trade agreement will come into effect on January 1 between Australia China, Japan, New Zealand, South Korea, and the 10 Association of Southeast Asian Nations, the ASEAN nations, Brunei, Jerusalem, Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam. The Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, the RCEP, has been described as not a particularly ambitious trade agreement that does not deliver much extra benefit for Australia, but it is significant because of the numbers of countries signed up to it, which accounts for almost one-third of the world's population and gross domestic product. It also simplifies rules of origin and other trading standards and contains a single set of rules and procedures for exporters to use the agreement's preferential tariff measures across the region and increases opportunities for businesses to access regional value chains. Well, that's the theory. Personally, these international trade agreements seem to me to be more about political posturing than economic outcomes. Hard to measure them anyway, of course. Let's talk now about single-use plastic bags. They're going to be banned in South Australia. They're going to expand their plastic ban from March 1 to cover polystyrene food and beverage containers, as well as oxy-degradable plastics, if businesses are able to find suitable alternatives. The ACT also plans to ban straws, fruit and veggie barrier bags, cotton bud sticks and degradable plastics from 1 July, following consultation. And in New South Wales, the supply of lightweight plastic bags with a thickness of 35 microns or less, including bags made of biodegradable, compostable or bioplastics, will be banned from June 1. And from November 1, more items will be prohibited, including single-use plastic straws, cutlery, stirrers, cotton buds, plates and bowls, expanded polystyrene food service items and microbeads. And Western Australia plans to ban certain plastic items by the end of the year, including barrier produce bags, microbeads, polystyrene packaging, polystyrene cups, coffee cups and lids, cotton buds with plastic shafts, and oxy-degradable plastics. Plastics, of course, designed to break up more rapidly into the fragments under certain conditions. And Queenslanders are being encouraged to have their say on possible future bans, with submissions open until January 28th. Now, this is a big one. There are changes to land tax for Victorian properties. They'll kick in from January 1 for Victorians, and they include an increase on the tax-free threshold for general land tax rates from $250,000 to $300,000. So tax will only have to be paid on land worth more than $300,000. There'll be no change for land held in trust. Private gender-exclusive clubs will no longer be eligible for a land tax exemption. And taxpayers with taxable land holdings worth more than $1.8 million will see their land tax increase by 0.25 percentage points. And for those with land holdings worth more than $3 million, it'll increase by 0.3 percentage points. And from July 1, there will also be changes to how windfall gains linked to rezoning decisions are taxed. If the value of your land increases by $500,000 due to a rezoning decision, it will be taxed at 50%, with the tax phasing in from $100,000. Elsewhere, children eligible for COVID vaccinations, children 5 to 11-year-olds, will be able to get vaccinated with Pfizer's confirmatory COVID-19 vaccine from January the 10th, and parents can book those appointments through the Vaccine Clinic Finder. There are also new mental health levies in Victoria. From January 1, Victorian businesses with national payrolls of more than $10 million a year will face a payroll tax surcharge on the Victorian share of wages of 0.5% above a certain threshold. Businesses with payrolls above $100 million will pay an extra 0.5%. The money collected will go towards mental health services and other recommendations of the Royal Commission. There will be an exemption for private schools, hospitals, charities, local councils and wages paid for parental and volunteer leave. And there is also better support for disabled veterans from January 1. The disability pension for totally and permanently incapacitated veterans will be renamed the disability compensation payment to reflect the fact that it is not an income support pension, but is instead a compensation payment. The payment will also be simplified, including changes to the disability income rent test, so severely disabled veterans don't receive less rent assistance than those with lesser disabilities because of the amount of compensation they receive. And the Defence Force Income Support Allowance, the DFISA, will be abolished, but no veteran, they say, will be worse off, with some private renters possibly receiving more than they did previously. The changes had previously been expected to come in from September the 20th, but were brought forward. And it was also a year of change for superannuation after Parliament passed a series of reforms in June. Since November, new Superfund members have been stapled to the first fund they joined, while those already in the workforce have been stapled to their current super fund. The government introduced the measure to stop people unintentionally setting up new superannuation accounts every time they started a new job. People with multiple superannuation accounts end up paying unnecessary fees that can erode their retirement benefits by as much as $50,000, according to Super Consumers Australia. Treasurer Josh Frydenberg said that multiple account fees were costing members $450 million a year, money that could have gone towards building their retirement savings. Underperforming super funds were also in the spotlight. Under changes brought in by the federal government's Your Future, Your Super legislation, financial regulator APRA tested the performance of super funds against industry benchmarks and posted the results on a new comparison tool run by the ATO. To begin with, APRA only looked at the performance of default super funds to which employers sign up workers if they make no other choice. As a result, the regulator named and shamed 13 funds that failed to meet benchmarks for returns, with about 1.1 million Australians found to have invested a combined $56.2 billion in those underperforming funds. APRA sent letters to those Australians informing them of their funds' underperformance with separate data from industry Super Australia, finding that failing to switch to a better fund could cost those members up to $209,000 by retirement. This is because the government's new stapling measures mean that people will be stuck in these dud funds for life unless they make an active choice to switch. But the legislation also stipulated that if a fund underperforms for two consecutive years, it will be barred from accepting new members until it improves its performance. And from July 2022, choice funds that are trustee-directed will also be included in the performance testing. But platform-style funds, where members build tailor-made investment portfolios, will be left out altogether. And next, there is the best financial interest duty. Parliament introduced a new best financial interest duty to ensure all superfund expenditure is in the interests of members. The coalition wanted to shut down what it considers to be overtly political and financially wasteful advertising by industry superfunds. The new duty drew heavy criticism, with funds warning it ran counter to a key recommendation of the Hayne Royal Commission and would lead to higher costs for members, as funds would have to carry out additional compliance without any corresponding benefit. But the measure was far less controversial than an abandoned veto power that would have given the Treasurer of the day the power to block any investment by a super fund, regardless of whether it was in the members' best interests. Before the new duty was introduced, super funds were already legally obliged to act in their members' best interests. But of course, the question is, did they always do that? And of course, the other thing about superannuation is to question all the fees. Because of course, the truth is that overall performance is often much lower than stated publicly because of the real fees that are taken year in and year out. Unfortunately, transparency in the superannuation sector is still very low. And for many people, their superannuation is just not performing as well as it should be. So standing back, there's a raft of things that have been brought in, but I have to say I question whether some of those things that have been brought in are the most important. It almost seems that we're fiddling while Rome burns. There are other bigger questions and bigger issues that we should be focusing on, but we seem to be deflected into thinking about some of the smaller, easier things to legislate change through, rather than dealing with the big picture issues that are confronting us, from climate change through to asbestos and other issues. So one of the things that I'll be doing through this year is continuing to highlight some of those big picture issues that we need to be discussing. And by the way, I've had a number of people ask me again about the situation around deposit bail-in in Australia. And I will be coming back to address that specifically in a future show, because this issue is not yet dead here, and that is also a concern. So as we come into the new year, let's continue to focus on those issues which can make the biggest difference to real ordinary Australians, and get our politicians and state and federal governments to work in our best interests rather than their own. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.